Was excited this week to get back our canvas. So we've had prints that Brian Ringley printed for us, but this is our final product. So we're going to keep this up here for a little while before we hang it out. But if you haven't had a chance to check those pictures out, we were really excited how well that turned out this year. We're starting to fill up the board. Obviously, by the end of the year, it'll be pretty packed of different people in the Bible who shape the story of God and of His people. As we've kind of seen the last couple of weeks, we're getting into some of the stories which aren't always encouraging, aren't always models of our faith. And today will be kind of similar. Before we get there, I want to remind you about a show that was on ABC from 1993 until 2005. It was a special every year that Barbara Walters did, and probably many of you caught snippets of it through the years. Each year she would choose her 10 most fascinating people of the year, and she would sit down and interview them. And they came from all walks of life, politicians and athletes and philanthropists and successful business people and movie stars. And it was always interesting to see who she would choose every year. And she would interview, have the set interviews leading up to the last interview every episode would be her most fascinating person of the year. The very first year, it was Nelson Mandela. Hillary Clinton was twice, once as the First Lady and once as the Secretary of State. One year, it was Mother Teresa. J.K. Rowling was the most fascinating one year. Steve Jobs, I believe that was posthumously, was the most fascinating person of the year. And it was always interesting to watch to see who she chose. And it was interesting because it kind of covered the gamut. Those were all the most interesting or fascinating person of the year. But of the 10 each year, there was people as diverse as Rush Limbaugh, and Bernie Sanders was chosen one year. Bradley Cooper and Steven Spielberg, Donald Trump and Joel Osteen. Just kind of covers the gamut. Dennis Rodman, LeBron James. Just always interesting, and I always enjoy those types of things because when you're talking about celebrities and people that you really can't get to know, the average person, some of them strike a fancy with us. Like we just feel a resonance with them. And it reminds me of one of my favorite dinner conversation questions. And I want to offer this to you and have you discuss among yourselves for a few minutes. But if you could sit down with dinner with three different people, what three people would you choose? It could be anybody who's alive. Let's at least limit it to living people. But three people anywhere in the world to come and have dinner with you one night to sit around the table. Think about that for a minute, and I want you to talk amongst yourself and just share, because I think you learn a lot about people by the way they answer this question. Some of you may be thinking of people that none of us know because you're weird. And your circles are weird. Some of you may be thinking about somebody who you would never want to sit down and have a meal with. But just kind of conversing about this for a few minutes, I think we'll learn a little bit about each other. So Hope's down here by herself, so somebody come over here and share with Hope. Gather around and share the three people that you would like to have dinner with. And go. I know I'm putting you on the spot, but go for a few minutes. Three people. Thank you, Chris. Okay. All right, finish up here. You only had three. It shouldn't take that long, right? I just think it's an interesting conversation, and inevitably, I sat down with Hope. Hope, the first person you thought of, was never have been somebody I thought that Hope Richard would want to sit down with. Vladimir Putin. So just imagine Hope and Vladimir Putin, and the only other people I could think that you probably want to sit with is John and Nancy. Which, it kind of reminded me of a joke that I found out last night that I thought was hilarious. You know what the Japanese guy said to the other Japanese guy? I have no idea. I don't speak Japanese. I just thought that was hilarious. Made me think of Putin. There probably ought to be a translator there. That's what made me think of. What are some of the other people that you want to have a meal with? You guys. Queen Elizabeth. Elon Musk. Okay, there's a good one. I like. See, don't you? I mean, you just learn so much about people. So much. Glenn and Bill, you guys have a good one? Okay. Glenn is always going to have something. But Chuck? Chuck Durasio. Yeah, immediately you think of folks that, yeah, they're a different place, but be able to have that moment. Absolutely. Mike? This will be interesting. Give us just one. The Pope. He had to like check that off his Catholic card today. Like, I mean, I have to say the Pope, otherwise I'll get kicked out. Julia, who would you want to sit down and meal with? Mike, she had those already. She'd been thinking about this before. Deb, you have somebody? J.K. Rowling. Now, J.K. was one of the most popular. She would definitely be kind of on my list of five, maybe. I don't know, be close. Chris mentioned Stephen Hawking, because he thinks he can hang with him. He wants to see which one of them is smarter. My money's on you, Chris. I don't care. Money's on you. Nicole, I don't know you very well. You said Stephen Hawking. You guys should talk. You need to hang out with each other. Somebody else? Cameron, what do we got? LeBron. LeBron is on my list, too. I just find him to be fascinating. And the older he gets, and the more successful he is, and he has like this, he didn't go to college, but he's emerging as like one of the prominent African-American voices in the country. What an interesting conversation it would be to sit with LeBron. Would you be able to talk to him, or would you just sit there? Ron Cole, what about you? Man, let that one sink in a little bit. That would be, I just want to go and watch that meal. Yeah, somebody top that for eclectic nature. Anybody else have anybody you want to bring up? But Val, what about, who'd you say? Willie Nelson. Val wants to roll a doobie with Willie Nelson. You heard it here. And talk about tax evasion. You know, you think about a lot of guys like that, you think they just have the most interesting lives. I mean, it would just be so interesting to do, especially the older, you know, the older they are. You think about Chuck, you know, just anybody who's lived a long life to be able to sit down and just listen to their stories about life. We could do this again, but you probably don't want to do it again. We could do it again when you're talking about, if you could sit down with three people from the Bible. Like, I think everybody would pick Jesus, okay? So let's. And Chris wanted to bring that up. Jesus is still alive, so that was one of his choices, too. Leave it to Chris to be literal about this whole thing. But if you could sit down with three people from the Bible and have a meal with them, like think of the interesting people who are in the Bible. Like, I was thinking about this week, and I was like, you could sit down with Balaam. Remember him? So tell us about that donkey talking to you, you know? Like, that would just be a really interesting conversation to have. And then you have guys like Elijah, who were on Mount Carmel with the altar inflamed, and remember how he was mocking the prophets of Baal? Like, I wonder if he was kind of a jerk in some ways. like, tell us again about how you mocked those prophets. And then I thought about Moses. Like, imagine being able to sit down with Moses and talk about watching God etch the Ten Commandments into the stone. I mean, that's kind of what we're trying to do with these with these services each week is to try to get into the lives of some of these people in the Bible. But we realize that sitting down and talking to them would always be so much more interesting and deep than just trying to back our way into the story a little bit. I thought of Peter. There's so many things that I'd like to ask Peter and talk to him about walking on the water. What was it like when the rooster crowed and you realized that you denied Jesus? I mean, so many just really, really great conversations that we could have with people in the Bible. In the last couple of weeks, since we began kind of the Lenten season, we began to kind of focus, in a lot of ways, as we go through the year, a lot of the Sunday characters are just kind of shot from the hip. I mean, it's just kind of all over the place. But there's a couple times we're going to kind of focus in on a period of time. And so during Lent, we're focusing in on the passion of the Christ and the final days and weeks, or days and hours of Jesus' life. And so last week we talked about Judas. And today we come to the character that I find the most fascinating among all of those that kind of play a role in the final hours of Jesus. And it's Pontius Pilate. I think Pontius Pilate is the most interesting person, you know, other than Jesus, of course, in this final time period of Jesus. Because when you read the story of Pontius Pilate, when you consider his angle in the story, he leaves you feeling a little conflicted. Like, it's easy to picture him as the bad guy. I mean, he's ultimately the one that has the power to save Jesus, and he ultimately hands Jesus over. But as you read through the interaction with Jesus, throughout that interaction, he's trying, seemingly, to try to do what he can to save Jesus. He doesn't think he's guilty. And so after I read the story, I'm always like, how do we feel about Pilate? How do we feel about Pilate? And so we're going to try to enter his story a little bit this morning for a few minutes. You should know that there's four Gospels, of course. Matthew, Mark, and Luke are the synoptic Gospels. And they don't really tell us much about the interaction that Jesus has with Pilate. We can probably all picture the scene, whether it's in The Passion of the Christ or some of the famous movies made about Jesus and his crucifixion. And we could probably all picture the scene with him and Pilate and the interaction that they have. Almost all of that is from the Gospel of John. In Matthew, Mark, and Luke, the interaction is very simple. They're much more interested in the encounter that Jesus has with Caiaphas within the Jewish ruling courts. Because you remember, he begins in the Jewish courts and he eventually gets turned over to the Roman courts. And that's where we're going to pick up the story this morning in John chapter 18. So hang with me. We're going to read a significant chunk of this text. And I want you to kind of enter into the story considering how peculiar Pilate's role is in all of this. John 18, beginning in verse 28. Jesus' trial before Caiaphas ended in the early hours of the morning. And then he was taken to the headquarters of the Roman governor. Now Matthew, Mark, and Luke are really interested in Caiaphas's the trial before Caiaphas. John's not particularly interested in that. He kind of moves us quickly to the headquarters of Pilate. Now, notice this line, because it's full of irony. If you studied the Gospel of John very much, you know that John kind of capitalizes on irony. If you're an English major, Ron, Chris, you can love this stuff. Like, this is kind of the peculiar, ironic twist that John is constantly putting out. His accusers didn't go inside because it would defile them and they wouldn't be allowed to celebrate the Passover. Like, you can almost chuckle at that, right? They've set up Jesus, who's innocent, for this trial, but they're not going to go into the Roman house because they don't want to be defiled for the Passover. Oh, now they're worried about the law. Just don't worry about the fact that you're handing over an innocent man. So Pilate, the governor, went out to them and asked, "What is your charge against this man?" "Well, we wouldn't have handed him over to you if he weren't a criminal," they retorted. Now, it's interesting that they don't give any accusation. They don't tell him, "Well, he did this," or "he did." They just said, "Don't you trust us? We wouldn't have handed a guy over if he wasn't guilty of something." So Pilate tells them, "Well, then why don't you take him away and judge him by your own law? Only the Romans are permitted to execute someone," the Jewish leaders replied. This fulfilled Jesus' prediction about the way he would die. So early in this story, we get their true motives. They have brought him here because they want him dead, even though they haven't even made a formal accusation against him. "Hey, just trust us, he's a bad dude, and we've brought him here because we want him executed, and we're not allowed to do that in our courts. So Pilate goes back into the headquarters and called for Jesus to be brought to him, which kind of sets the tone for the story. There's kind of two things that are happening. Jesus and Pilate are having their meeting inside the house, but none of the Jews are going to go there because they don't want to be defiled. And so Pilate's going to go back and forth between his inner meeting with Jesus and the outer meeting with the Jewish leaders. And then Jesus has one of the most intriguing dialogues that he has in his entire lifetime. Pilate goes into him and asks, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Matthew, Mark, and Luke, that's pretty much all the interaction is. He asks him if he's the king of the Jews. Jesus replies, "It is as you say," and that's kind of the end. John is much more interested in a prolonged dialogue here. Jesus replies, "Is this your question, or did others tell you about me?" "Am I a Jew?" Pilate retorted. "Your own people and their leading priests brought you to me for trial. Why? What have you done?" Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not an earthly kingdom. If it were, my followers would fight to keep me from being handed over to the Jewish leaders. But my kingdom is not of this world." Pilate said, "So you are a king?" Jesus responded, "You say that I'm a king. Actually, I was born and came into this world to testify to truth. All who love the truth recognize that what I say is true." Pilate, and probably the most famous question in all the New Testament, asks Jesus, "What is truth?" Then he went out again to the people and told them, "He's not guilty of any crime. But you have a custom of asking me to release one prisoner each year at Passover. Would you like me to release this king of the Jews?" But they shouted back and said, "No, not this man. We want Barabbas." Barabbas was a revolutionary. So again, at the end of this story, there's so much irony here. There's so much irony in Pilate asking Jesus, "What is truth?" Because John is the gospel just a couple chapters earlier, which records Jesus saying, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." So as a reader of the story, Pilate is asking a question that we already know the answer to. And then the height of irony in this story is when Pilate says, "Do you want me to release Jesus, or do you want me to release Barabbas?" Barabbas was guilty of the same crimes that they were accusing Jesus of. The difference was he had already been found guilty and had already been delivered over for his crimes. So the irony is that the Jews would rather see Jesus, who hadn't been convicted of this crime, simply on their accusation, they would rather see him punished and let Barabbas, the guilty one, go free. As we continue reading in John chapter 19, Pilate had Jesus flogged with a lead-tipped whip. The soldiers wove a crown of thorns and put it on his head, and they put a purple robe on him. "Hail, King of the Jews!" they mocked as they slapped him across the face. And even at this point, in verse 4, Pilate went outside again to the people and said, "I'm going to bring him out to you now, but understand clearly that I do not find him guilty." Then Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, and Pilate said, "Look, here is the man." When they saw him, the leading priests and temple guards began shouting, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" "Take him yourselves and crucify him," Pilate said. "I find him not guilty." The Jewish leaders replied, "By our law, he ought to die because he called himself the Son of God." When Pilate heard this, he was more frightened than ever. He took Jesus back into the headquarters again and asked him, "Where are you from?" But Jesus gave no answer. "Why don't you talk to me?" Pilate demanded. "Don't you realize that I have the power to release you or to crucify you?" And then Jesus said, "You would have no power over me at all unless it was given to you from above. So the one who handed me over to you has the greater sin." Then Pilate tried to release him, but the Jewish leaders shouted, "If you release this man, you're no friend of Caesar. Anyone who declares himself a king is a rebel against Caesar." When they said this, Pilate brought Jesus out to them again. Pilate sat down on the judgment seat on a platform that is called the stone pavement, in Hebrew, Gabbatha. It was now about noon on the day of preparation for the Passover. And Pilate said to the people, "Look, here is your king." Away with him, they yelled. Away with him, crucify him. What? Pilate asked. Crucify your king? We have no king but Caesar, the leading priest shouted back. And then Pilate turned Jesus over to them to be crucified. This is the portion of the text that's so difficult to process when it comes to trying to see the situation through Pilate's eyes. But he seems to do all that he can do to keep Jesus from meeting this fate. Time after time after time, he tells the people, I don't find him guilty. I don't see that he's done anything wrong. And they yell back to him, and then the irony kind of builds through the story. And you can tell that John, as an author, is using this, maybe even taking some liberties, to make the point that, hey, it's at the time that the priests were to begin the process of preparing for Passover. That's what time it is, right now. And Jesus is getting prepared for the crucifixion. The people yell out, we have no king but Caesar. The complete, exact opposite of what the gospel calls for, that we have no king, no Lord, but Christ. And so we're left conflicted. They have this exchange where Pilate tells Jesus, don't you realize how much power I have? And Jesus says, you only have the power that was given to you from above, from my Father. Jesus seems to be sympathetic, at least somewhat, to Pilate. He tells him that the people who turned him over are more guilty than Pilate. Of course, in the other accounts, he washes his hands of the situation. Nobody seems to get Jesus. Last week we saw him betrayed by one of his inner circle. This week it's the ruler among the Romans. His disciples had shared this intimate moment with him at the Last Supper where he washed their feet, told them that that was an example for each other to follow, said this is the way that you're supposed to understand. He has been telling them for years that he is going to be killed. And yet still, when the time came, all of his disciples scrambled and Jesus is left by himself. And now he has the man who has his fate in his hands, Pilate, telling him, I've got the power to release you. And instead of Jesus using that as an out, saying, yes, release me, I've got more work to do, Jesus tells him, you know what, the only reason that you have the authority that you have is because my Father has given it. Do what you must. And so we're conflicted. Is Pilate the good guy or the bad guy? Because in the end, the way we understand it, Pilate is the one who had the authority to stop it. Pilate was the one who could have said, you know what? I don't find any guilt with this man, and I refuse to execute an innocent man. But instead, and this is where it seems the message is here for us, instead he tries to straddle the fence. He tries to have one foot on Jesus' side and one foot realizing that he's got to appease the people. He wouldn't fully submit to Christ. In the same way that we saw last week, that Judas wouldn't fully submit to Christ. That Judas was still hung up on doing things the way that he thought things should be done. And now Pilate is doing the same exact thing. Doing things the way that he thinks they should be done. Lent is in full swing now, over the right, kind of in the middle of it. And the big goal of Lent is to really spend time, each one of us individually, reflecting on our relationship with God. Reflecting on our obedience, our faithfulness, and especially our own sins and shortcomings. As we consider the story of Pilate, we should be confronted with the reality that it is easy to dabble in our relationship with God. It's easy to dabble in our relationship with Jesus. Understanding what we do about the crucifixion, watching and looking at the cross. Chris, I appreciate you putting our eyes and drawing our attention to that this week. And it's easy to come in here on Sundays and be fully focused on Christ and then to walk out the door and just like we say to each other, we'll see you next week. We may even say that to Christ himself. Jesus, we'll see you next week. I know the cross is going to be on the stage next week, and I know we're drawing to Easter, and I'll see you next week. And I want to tell you that that's not much different than Pilate's relationship with Christ. He was intrigued. He saw that there was something significant about Jesus. He saw that there was something interesting. He saw that there was innocence there. And yet he was not compelled to submit his life in the same way that Judas was not committed to submitting his life fully to this Messiah. Ron sent me an email this week and brought up a great question. What if there was no Judas? What if there was no Pilate, right? Somebody had to be the bad guy. Jesus has been saying for months and months and years, I'm going to eventually be turned over to the authorities and crucified. Pilate drew the short straw. Judas drew the short straw. I don't know the answer, Ron. But what we see as we reflect in this is the question that we should all be asking. Am I Judas? Am I Pilate? Am I the one who's just kind of dabbling with this whole thing? Or have I fully submitted? James chapter 4, verse 7 says, so humble yourselves before God. A different translation says, submit yourselves to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Come close to God, and God will come close to you. Wash your hands, you sinners. Purify your hearts, for your loyalty is divided between God and the world. Let there be tears for what you have done. Let there be sorrow and deep grief. Let there be sadness instead of laughter and gloom instead of joy. Humble yourselves before the Lord, and he will lift you up in honor. This was written not long after Jesus' death and resurrection. Christians were already facing this twofold pull to want to serve Christ, but yet want to love the world. As you spend time in prayer this week, I would suggest that you focus on this idea. What part of your lives are not fully submitted to God? It seems as though we kind of compartmentalize our lives, and we have different parts within us that, yeah, this part is all good. Maybe it's your money. Maybe it's your relationships. Maybe it's your leisure. Maybe it's your time. Whatever it is, what part of your life is not fully submitted to Christ? As we read through the Passion narrative, we see that we're in good company in this struggle. That Judas, who spent every day with Jesus for years, betrayed him. That Pilate, who was sympathetic to Jesus, who liked the guy, still couldn't quite fully submit. It is at the heart of our faith, it is the challenge of our faith to submit ourselves to Christ and say, take control of everything. I like to take control of everything. There's no time as good as now to begin to ask ourselves how we can more fully submit to Christ. I would invite you to reflect on those words as we stand and we sing this song, Guiding Our Eyes. You stand with us.
Thank you. and angels join in concert, sing the praises of the Lamb, while the blissful courts of heaven sweetly echo with His name. Alleluia, alleluia, here we now His love proclaim. Alleluia, alleluia, here we now His love proclaim. Alleluia, alleluia, here we now His love proclaim. Alleluia, alleluia, here we now His love proclaim.